Hello and welcome to Pacific Review. I'm Richard Ewart. Coming up, how Vanuatu's drive to reduce pollution goes way beyond banning single-use plastic bags. Papua New Guinea's media wars take a twist with newspapers accused of promoting fake government news. And FIFA steps in at last to try to heal the rift that split PNG soccer in two.
Now, I think there's a way, and I believe that we will all come together. And I've been waiting for that. And it's like a whole load of weight upon my shoulder has now gone off from me.
More from John Caponato, president of the Breakaway Football Federation PNG, to come later. But first, since the turn of the century, Papua New Guinea has been officially free of polio, a disease that can cause temporary or permanent paralysis. So confirmation of the first polio case in PNG for decades has come as a huge shock and put the health system on alert across three provinces. And as Nick Fogarty reports, officials are working overtime to ensure that supplies of polio vaccine are distributed to the isolated communities considered to be most at risk.
PNG's acting Prime Minister Charles Abel sought to reassure his people after news of the polio outbreak.
So I just want to impress upon the public that there's no need to panic. Government is going through the protocols as required.
Health Minister Sir Peter Timu had similar words.
I want to assure our people and our international friends, and because this is also a APK, I want to assure our people, our visitors, that we are on top of this.
A public health emergency has been declared in Morobe, Madang and Eastern Highlands provinces after the polio virus was found in stool samples of two healthy children in an urban settlement outside the town of Lae. This came after it was confirmed that a six-year-old boy who'd been suffering weakness in his limbs was infected with polio. Jackson Apo is in charge of disease control in Eastern Highlands province. He admits the pressure is on to stop the spread of the terrible disease.
The problem now is we do not have polio vaccines in the province at this point in time, but I think the National Department and World Health Organization are working around the clock to procure and distribute the polio vaccines to these provinces, Eastern Highlands, Medang Province and Morobe, and other provinces throughout the country as well. Our vaccine coverage, especially in Eastern Highlands, is just below 60%, and that's not good enough for a community. To have a good protection is at least 80 to 90%. But at the moment, we're having a problem with our coverage. So that's my fear. You know, if the circulating virus is in Highlands, we might have a problem. But we just hope that the situation in Lae doesn't travel up to Eastern Highlands.
Around 1,000 children have been immunised around the affected settlement, and the number of confirmed infections remains at one. But Jackson Apo says it's a time of high alert for medical staff.
Health officers at the facility have been made aware that any suspected case that comes into the facility, especially with fever and fatigue and weaknesses of lower limbs or loss of muscle tone, they need to refer them immediately to the provincial hospital for the pediatrician to examine and at the same time to collect stool specimen and send them immediately to Port Moresby. And they will send it further down to Melbourne, Victoria Infectious Disease Research Lab.
Before this outbreak, PNG hadn't seen a case of polio since 1986, and the country was certified polio-free in 2000. The government and NGOs are serious about stopping the return of the virus, and Health Minister Sir Peter Timu says they're willing to use the law to enforce strict containment measures.
Under the public health legislation, one of the areas that we need to do, and I have the powers to do that, is, for example, in Lae. I will have to declare that as an infected area, therefore we need to isolate. We will then mount control measures in that area. My view is if certain people have been identified, then those individuals under the declaration, they should be prevented from moving out of that declared isolated area.
PNG's Health Minister Sepeka Timu clearly not wanting to take any chances during the current emergency, and the reporter there was Nick Fogarty. Now, as Australian shoppers get to grips with the removal of single-use plastic bags on the country's two biggest supermarket chains, Vanuatu is taking even bigger steps to reduce the amount of plastic pollution that country generates. As well as single-use bags, the government in Port Vila has also decided to do away with polystyrene takeaway food containers and plastic drinking straws. The primary aim is to protect the marine environment, but as Liam Fox reports, news of the plastic ban has already had a positive impact on the economy by driving up sales of locally made woven bags.
There's an incredible array of fresh fruit and vegetables and seafood for sale at the main market in Port Vila. That's where Rosalie Vartu sells hand-woven bags and baskets for people to carry their groceries. She sources them from women all around Vanuatu.
Around the islands of Vanuatu, we've got different cultures and traditions, and also how we build our bags out of different raw materials. And we use pandanus leaves, we use coconut leaves, and also hibiscus fibre.
The bags range in price from around $10 to $25. That's not cheap compared to some imported bags, but Ms. Vartu says business has been good ahead of the impending plastic ban.
The promotion, especially in the Facebook and also the media, it makes a lot of women who've heard about this, they came over, and also the expats that are living in Port Vila, and there's an increase of sales of shopping bags.
As well as generating increased income for women around the country, Ms. Vartu says the plastic ban has revived interest in the practice of weaving in areas where it was dying out.
Some of the island, actually, you cannot see most of the weaving. Maybe this is one of the impacts where we adopt the Western style. One of them is the use of plastic bags. So this encourages the women to find their own traditional ways of weaving.
On Sunday, the 1st of July, the government's ban on single-use plastic bags, plastic straws and polystyrene takeaway containers comes into effect. From then, it will be illegal to manufacture, sell or give away those plastic products. The only exception is the use of plastic bags to wrap and carry meat and fish. The man in charge of implementing the ban is Ron Mogoroa from the Department of Environmental Protection and Conservation.
The week of 1st of July, we will go from shop to shop just to check if all the shops comply with the law.
Individuals who breach the ban face a fine of up to $250. For businesses, it's $600. For repeat offenders, the maximum fine will be doubled. While the local manufacturing of single-use plastic bags will be banned, their importation will not, due to the exemption for wrapping meat and fish. Mr. Mogoroa says his department will be working closely with customs officials to monitor the importation of plastic bags.
If we want to know who is importing the plastic, then we just contact the customs, then the customs will give us the record, so we would know who import plastic.
It seems businesses are preparing for the plastic ban. A spokesperson at Vanuatu's biggest supermarket chain, Au Bon Marché, said the banned items will be removed from all stores on Saturday night and customers will be able to purchase fabric shopping bags for around $2. Dr. Christina Shaw, CEO of the Vanuatu Environmental Science Society, is an enthusiastic supporter of the ban.
We don't have the same clogging of rivers and beaches just covered in plastic like you do see in some other areas in the world, but we don't want to get to that stage, so hopefully we're cutting it off before we get to be a big problem.
The Society conducts regular cleanups around Port Vila, and Dr. Shaw says they pick up plenty of plastic products that are not covered by the ban. She hopes it will be expanded in the future.
The most obvious things are plastic cutlery, plastic cups, polystyrene cups, other plastic takeaway containers, because at the moment only the polystyrene ones are included in the ban. And then other things that we tend to see in our litter cleanups, plastic bottles and nappies.
Dr. Christina Shaw, Chief Executive of the Vanuatu Environmental Science Society, ending that report from Liam Fox. The chances of Fiji's star weightlifter Eileen Thikamatana being persuaded to reverse her decision to give up the sport would appear to be slim. The Commonwealth Games gold medalist has walked away in protest at the removal of her longtime coach. The president of Weightlifting Fiji, Atmar Maharaj, says there is a way back for Thikamatana, but the tone of her resignation letter doesn't bode well. And Weightlifting Fiji can't say they weren't warned. Just 3 weeks ago, Eileen Thikamatana made it very plain that she was not prepared to compete for her country again unless her long-time coach Joe Wetty was brought back into the fold.
If there's no Joe Wetty going into a competition, then I won't be there. I'm no longer a Fiji team member. I'm no longer a weightlifter. I'll quit my sport.
That threat wasn't heeded. Joe Wetty is still out in the cold, and the young weightlifter tipped for greatness has been lost to the sport. But the president of Weightlifting Fiji, Atmar Maharaj, is not exactly handing out an olive branch.
We are officially writing to her, expressing our disappointment. There's no athlete, right? No individual is above the sport. any federation must be able to have control over its athletes. If we don't, we have bigger, greater risks. So therefore, there is a lot more at stake than basically being presented here.
Fiji's sports minister says he won't be intervening in the dispute, and the president of the Fijian Olympic Committee, Joe Roden, says they are in no position to dictate terms to Thika Matana.
It's her choice. She has decided to withdraw based on her own reasoning. And from our point of view, it's disappointing because she was our best prospect for the Tokyo Olympic and future games. Eh? But that's her choice and we cannot do anything about it.
At the heart of the dispute that's persuaded Thika Matana to walk away is weightlifting Fiji's decision to appoint the former Olympic champion Hossein Tabakoli from Iran as their national coach. Atmar Maharaj says the move was made in the best interests of the sport and had been in the planning stages for 4 years. He won't be drawn on what or who derailed it, but relations with the Secretary General of the Oceania Weightlifting Federation, Paul Coffer, who was Eileen Thika Matana's mentor at the recent Commonwealth Games, are frosty, to say the least.
It's all documented, and we've provided a full script of what has happened to the stakeholders, and it was all going well, but what turned the table is a big question.
Is that a question you know the answer to, or you're just not inclined to say at this stage?
Of course we know the answers, right? But at the moment, we are not going to wash our dirty linen in public.
Can I ask how relations stand between yourselves at the Federation now and the Oceania Federation, and obviously Paul Coffer, who's had a big part in Eileen Thika Matana's career up to now?
The relationship is very limited.
And is that part of the problem? I take it you prefer not to comment on that. Fiji has only ever won one Olympic medal, the gold secured by their sevens team in Rio in 2016. So the idea that a second medal opportunity might be lost will not sit well with Fijian sports fans. But if people are unhappy with the way weightlifting Fiji is running the sport, then Joe Roden says they have to go through the proper channels to secure change.
Well, they can only do that if they have an AGM. That's when the decision of the clubs come in and select the new set of officials. But until then, they need to wait for the AGM or call for a special AGM, and that's for them to sort out.
And Joe Roden hasn't given up on changing Thika Matana's mind, and Atmar Maharaj says the door is not closed to her, but it would appear it's not exactly wide open either.
We will wait until everything quieted down, and we will try and approach her and see what we can do to get her back to the sport. But for the time being, we will let everything cool off, and then we will approach her and see if she's still keen or interested, and we will try and get her back.
Door is open for her to return, but an athlete that belongs to Weightlifting Fiji has certain responsibilities, and we are required to meet that.
But the tone of Thika Matana's resignation letter to Ritesh Rataram, the General Secretary of Weightlifting Fiji, leaves very little room for optimism. It reads, "In sporting spirit, I wish you and Weightlifting Fiji the best of luck. But in saying that, I must in all honesty admit that I hope our paths never have to cross again." How long will it be, I wonder, before another country or another sport comes calling for Eileen Thika Matana? You're listening to Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia. I'm Richard Hewitt. The outspoken MP for Madang, Brian Kramer, has returned fire on the Papua New Guinea Media Council's accusation that he is undermining a free press. Mr. Kramer has accused some of PNG's newspapers of corruption and declared a war of protest against them for publishing what he calls fake government news that's intended to mislead the people. But as Bill Bainbridge reports, the Media Council say the MP is yet to provide them with evidence to back his claims.
The daily newspaper is still part of the daily routine in Port Moresby, as Radio Australia reporter Bethany Harriman found when he took to the streets.
I'm pleased to tell you why I do buy a newspaper. I buy newspapers because I want to read about other countries and other worlds.
And do you trust the news that is put out by the newspapers? Because the opposition says the news are fake news.
The newspapers, mostly they inform us on what's happening daily. He posts on Facebook, people get news on Facebook, but I'm not really...
If we stop it, then we will not know what is happening around the country, so...
Those sentiments will be music to the ears of Post Courier editor Todagia Kalola, whose sales have been threatened by Brian Kramer's anti-corruption campaign. The veteran newspaper editor has a simple message for the Madang MP. Put up or shut up.
As far as I'm concerned, the honourable member hasn't come out to verify or to at least tell us what corrupt message have we done. He has to come up with some classic examples and show it.
But Brian Kramer says he's confirmed that payments were made to a journalist in Madang, and he says proof of what he calls fake news is available to anyone who opens a newspaper.
The boycott is focused on the mainstream media publishing fake news, publishing misleading articles, articles that have been press statements that have been released to them by the government public relations, and they're running word for word without establishing the facts, without questioning the legitimacy of those articles. So there's no objectivity or balanced reporting.
Todagia Kalola defends the practice of accepting gifts as part of the PNG culture.
If you do something good for somebody, and if the person gives you something, it's like an appreciation. And basically most reporters, journalists in Papua New Guinea context, if it's given, we accept it. Because if we don't accept it, it might embarrass the person who's given culturally.
He says the battle is shaping up as a contest between established and new media in PNG.
I'm pretty certain that we just wanted to test the influence of social media against properly established, nationally owned media companies. And that's exactly what he's doing.
But Brian Kramer argues if newspapers lose readers, they'll only have themselves to blame.
Now, this is a three-week protest that I've asked the public or invited the public to participate in. Now, it's only been day three. Now, it's clear that they are struggling, or this protest is affecting their business, and that was the intent of it. So I expect by the week three, we should reach the peak of this protest. Now, it's up to them, the management of the media, mainstream media, to start negotiations or start discussions on how they're going to address this issue going forward. And that is how they're going to clean up their reporting. Because the fact is, the public have lost trust in the mainstream media. And that wasn't caused by me. That was caused by them.
The MP for Madang in Papua New Guinea, Brian Kramer, in fighting mood and ending that report from Bill Bainbridge. You're listening to Pacific Review with me, Richard Hewitt. There's been a backlash from civil society groups to a decision by the Solomon Islands government to press on with a review of its policy on the West Papuan region and its relations with Indonesia. The provincial government of Melaita and Honiara City Council are among those who say they'll maintain their support for West Papuan independence after Indonesian officials met local authorities for discussions. The aim was to give an airing to both sides of the argument, but as Bindi Rice reports, some local leaders are questioning Indonesia's apparent reluctance to invite West Papuan representatives to take part in the dialogue as well.
The Indonesian delegation's visit to Solomon Islands came as Honiara City Council was organising the Melanesian Arts Festival and looking to invite artists and performers from West Papua to take part. But Deputy Mayor Edi Nyava says negotiating with Indonesian Foreign Affairs officials on that issue alone has been difficult.
That's the challenge we're having. But we were very accommodative in saying that as soon as we know more about your status and how you're going to come in to be part of these events on premises, in our own venues, where we can tell people that you can come. It's just that they have not come back ever since we've talked.
The people of Honiara are known for their advocacy for the United Liberation Movement for West Papua. Many town rallies have been held in recent years for Solomon Islanders to show their support for independence. So when Indonesian officials were invited to the country by government as part of their community consultations on their West Papua policy, it came as no surprise that meeting the Honiara City Council was high on their agenda. But Deputy Mayor Nyava says the talks didn't go smoothly.
No, the Indonesian team that travelled, I actually met with them and we talked, and I said that we will assure our support pending your local counterpart coming to us and sharing more about your movement so that we see where our position will be.
Consultations were also held in Melaita province, but Premier Peter Ramohia says his government were persuaded to change their stance on support for the West Papuan people's right to self-determination.
We're in support of our brothers and sisters of West Papua. Not only as a government and people, we do not agree with what's going on in West Papua. If the intention by our government is to create something that will be fair and good for both sides, and at the same time good addressing other issues relating to the people of West Papua, then that will be a great thing to do. And we will support that as well. That will be something that my people of Malaysia and our provincial government will support.
But while Mr. Ramohia has no problem with Solomon Islands officials arranging talks with Jakarta, he says the conversation must involve the West Papuans as well.
Why can't reps from West Papua be on the delegation as well, if we are serious about doing something good about the situation in West Papua? When the delegation was here, the Solomon Islands government was represented, Indonesian government was also represented, but there was no representative from the West Papua side. So, I mean, that brings to mind questions as why the West Papuans are not part of this delegation.
The talks come after a group of Solomon Islands officials were invited on a fact-finding mission to Papua and West Papua by Indonesia in late April. A government spokesperson has told Pacific Beach the visiting Indonesian representatives also met officials in Western and Guadalcanal provinces, and that the aim of the trip was to get feedback on the future direction of Solomon Islands' national policy on West Papua. And it's been confirmed that the feedback contained in the final report to be submitted to Cabinet in due time will be the template for the Solomon Islands' future policy on West Papua and its relations with Indonesia.
Bindi Bryce reporting on the latest twists surrounding the West Papua debate and the often strained relations between the Pacific Island nations and Indonesia. More than 18 months after the sport of soccer was plunged into crisis in Papua New Guinea, the world ruling body FIFA has finally intervened. A specialist in governance and compliance has been dispatched on a fact-finding mission after the long-standing complaints lodged by the president of the Breakaway Football Federation, PNG, John Caponato, were finally acknowledged. And it seems pretty clear what the catalyst was that spurred FIFA into action. John Caponato says he first complained to FIFA at the end of 2016 after several of his supporters were controversially suspended ahead of the presidential Congress, where the incumbent David Chung won the vote and retained his power base. But in April this year, Mr. Chung suddenly resigned from all his posts with the Papua New Guinea FA, the Oceania Football Confederation and FIFA amid allegations of fraud. And John Caponato says it's no coincidence that only now have FIFA decided to step in to the PNG crisis.
I lodged a complaint to FIFA that I faxed to Zurich. In almost a year, we have not received any reply. Until David got suspended and quit from OFC, and all of a sudden, we now have FIFA listening and seeing the documents, and then now they've come to our aid to find out what is wrong with the Congress that took place in Kimbe.
So did David Chung deliberately block his rival's attempts to have FIFA investigate the PNG FA? John Caponato is in no doubt.
That would be the strongest feeling that I would have, that the complaints were blocked. It couldn't get into FIFA, it couldn't get into OFC.
The FIFA delegate is talking to all sides in an effort to get them around the same table. PNG's Vice Sports Minister Wesley Ramanai has been trying hard to achieve that same objective. However, he's been accused by the PNG FA of a conflict of interest because of his close connections with John Caponato. But Mr. Ramanai says it was David Chung who was guilty of that, and not him.
The conflict involved David Chung, and he wouldn't even take the matter up to FIFA. Before it goes to FIFA, it's got to go to OFC first, and David Chung is there, so he can't go up to FIFA. Senior vice president, he was the second boss of football in the whole world, so how could it have gone up?
Soccer has suffered badly in PNG since the crisis began, particularly at international level, where the Capitals were starting to pose a real threat to New Zealand as Oceania's number one team. Mr. Ramanai says soccer is important to the nation and the government wants to help, but it can do nothing until the current dispute is settled.
Jerry Donga might double the lead for the Solomon Islands. Beautiful ball by Benjamin Totori. The death of half-time. It is the Solomon Islands 2, Papua New Guinea 1.
We want to support football as long as there's been fighting going on in that country. As long as there's been fighting going on, government wouldn't support football. In terms of sponsorship, in terms of using of government facilities and all that, you know, government wants to be involved. It's of national interest. That's when the government comes in, because it does affect the country as a whole.
But with matters in FIFA's hands at last, John Caponato is optimistic that the world governing body can find a solution that will win the support of PNG's regional soccer associations and get the game back on track.
Now I think there's a way, and I believe that we will all come together. And I've been waiting for that. It is like a whole load of weight upon my shoulder has now gone off from me. And let the presidents decide for the future of the football in this nation.
John Caponato, more hopeful now that the rival factions in PNG soccer can be reunited. And rounding out this edition of Pacific Review from ABC Radio Australia. If you want to keep in touch with the big stories from the Pacific on demand, the program is also available as a podcast. I'm Richard Ewart, and thank you very much for listening.